Please.
441, authorize intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County or Multnomah County, Oregon, for the use of U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, National Sexual Assault Kit Initiative Program grant funds of $98,160 for agency personnel expenses.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you for having us. Concerning this ordinance, I am Molly Dahl. I am the Sex Crimes Detective Supervisor for the Bureau. And with me is Susan Lehman, and she's the Program Coordinator for the Sex Crimes Unit Sexual Assault Kit Initiative. Because you have the ordinance in front of you, I thought I'd give you a quick rehash if you have not been present for the prior council sessions that you've approved our two previous grants. Back in 2015, we received a Department of Justice grant for creating a sexual assault kit initiative to address the untested backlog of rape kits in the city of Portland. We received a $1 million grant, and conjoined with a grant that the district attorney's office also received, their grant pays for the testing of the kits. Our grant pays for the investigative body, the work group, advocates, to see this process through. The second grant we received last year is a supplemental grant that has helped us create our database for a sexual assault kit initiative so that we'll never be in this position again. We will know where all our kits are. We will know it will assist us in our grant reporting, and it's also an investigative tool for us. And it's very unique. The Feds, Department of Justice, and BJA also liked it so much that we are now sharing this database with other police agencies for free. So it's kind of a feather in the cap in the City of Portland's Police Bureau. Today we're seeking the ordinance that will authorize the IGA between us and Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. One of their forensic consultants, as well as a devoted DA, is funded by the BGA Saki grant. And because I know you probably want an update on the status of all of our kits, some numbers. So at the beginning, when we did an inventory, we identified 1,754 untested kits. Of that, the Bureau has submitted 1,677 to a private lab for testing. At this point, the lab has processed 906 of those submitted kits, and the remaining 77 untested kits are scheduled to be sent to the lab next week, thus ending our backlog.
That's good news.
Yes.
Could you just, am I out?
There you go.
Okay. Sorry. could you just review again why there were untested kits? What were the factors that led to there being them in the first place?
Okay. So there's a myriad of reasons, and Susan also is our numbers person, and she will assist in. We have kits dating back to 1987. The untested kits falls on the shoulders of the Portland Police Bureau because they've been in our property room, in our inventory. Decisions why kits are tested. Cases don't proceed to the district attorney's office. The crime lab deems kits that aren't going to go to court need to be tested. Victims that don't want to proceed in their case, those kits have not been tested. There's kits there that their cases were adjudicated, where someone was convicted of the crime and the offender was known, so they didn't test the kits. Every kit costs approximately $500 to test, so the Oregon State Crime Lab, being overwhelmed over the decades for a time-consuming test, those are just some of the reasons why. We've tried to eliminate police discretion when it comes to the kits. So now we've been full submission since 2015. Every kit gets sent to the lab. So we have taken that discretion out of the quotient, and now we're addressing getting OSP to hopefully increase their funding to hasten the testing of kits, because all of the kits that we have been tested by our outside lab, they are now waiting to be uploaded into CODIS, which is our national DNA database.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good. Commissioner Udaly, did you have a question?
Oh, I just was trying to track the numbers. You said 1,754 was the backlog. 1,677 were sent for testing. 906 have been processed. So I guess I'm just confused by the...
The difference between 1,754 and 1,677 is there's only 77 left.
Right, but yeah. The difference between 1,677 submitted and 906 processed.
906 is just the submitted kits.
Those are the ones that the private lab has finished testing on and provided reports
to us on. Oh, so they're just still in progress.
They're still processing.
Right. And it's actually been a quicker process at the private lab than we expected, so we're actually ahead of schedule. For a two-year grant with DANI, which is the district attorney's grant, the private lab is very efficient, so we're very happy with the results there.
Can I follow up on Commissioner Fritz's question just to make sure I understand something? What's the public interest in testing every kit, even if it's not physical evidence that is necessary in any trial? So take the example you have a kit, the alleged perpetrator has pled guilty to the offense. What is the public interest in testing beyond that point?
Yeah, go ahead.
There have been two widely done studies on serial sexual predators, and what it basically says is the majority of people who commit rape are serial predators. So although we may know our suspect is John Doe, Salem may have a rape with an unknown suspect that may be our John Doe. So the theory is to get them all tested so we can make those linkages.
Is it fair to say, as a rough analogy, it's like sometimes the DNA testing that then connects other crimes
Correct.
In other mm-hmm. jurisdictions?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. And even though some of the kits may be adjudicated or the victim still doesn't want to proceed and the individual cases don't proceed to prosecution, we can still identify serial rapists. And that's part of the beauty of having a sexual assault database of our own, and we can also collaborate with other states, because a lot of our serial rapists are travelers and they are currently, you know, in other prison systems or jails or other jurisdictions.
Thank you.
And of the tests we've tested so far, have there been any new developments on any of the old cases?
There has been. So of the 906 submitted kits, 384 are eligible for CODIS. That means that there's enough of a sample that can be uploaded into CODIS. 229 of those don't have sufficient levels of DNA for testing, and 293 of those kits were negative. So we're in the long run for the testing process. So it's going to be you know, a couple of years for all of this to come to fruition, and we'll have, you know, better understanding of the numbers and how it's benefited our victims.
So in plain English, then, I can tell people that the backlog that made so many headlines, mm-hmm. that backlog is gone when?
Should be by the end of the week. The last kit should be right. shipped by the end of this week.
The end of this week?
Yes.
Right.
That's good news. I'm glad to hear. And then going forward, we're on
full submission policy.
You've taken the discretion out. Everything mm-hmm. gets tested going forward.
Right.
And do you currently have sufficient resources to be able to do that as opposed to creating another backlog?
The Oregon State Crime Lab, in our opinion, doesn't have sufficient scientists to keep up with the workflow of all the new kits that are coming in, and we are the agency of abundance, so, you know, it's going to have to come from the state legislation to give them more resources so our kits aren't sitting over there for 6 months, a year, even longer sometimes.
Very good. Okay, and that's and obviously you can communicate through the chain to me, and I'll make sure that our legislative folks are all over that, because we obviously, now mm-hmm. that we have the success, we don't want to lose the momentum.
Right. We appreciate that.
I appreciate your work.
And do you try to contact the victim to let them know if there's any new developments, or if, you know, there wasn't enough of a sample or something like that?
We have developed a protocol, but it's also a case-by-case scenario in hoping that our advocates, if the victim should be, you know, contacted if there is a hit. We don't want to re-traumatize them with notification. So we want it to be something positive and give them a choice in their direction still. We continue a victim-centered approach to our victims.
And it should also be noted that our work group meets every Wednesday to review the cases. And even if the case does not have a CODIS hit, we re-review it to see if there's any other evidence we can send for DNA, like underwear or bed sheets, and whether it's worth reaching out to the victim to see if at this point she would be willing to go forward.
I remember asking those questions the last time we did this and being really glad to hear about the victim-centered approach and the care that you're putting into this program. So thank you very much.
And I just might make a note. Somebody sent me a text message reminding me that the Obama administration in their final days also sent some federal resources to the states for this purpose nationally. So I presume to some degree that's helping at the state level as well.
Yeah.
Great. Any further questions before we get to public testimony?
What does it mean when a kit is negative or test negative? What's that
There's,
mean?
There's no biological semen, sperm, or amylase, which is the protein in saliva.
Oh. Very good. So before we do that, and you can just take a seat. Maybe people have questions. I neglected to read the rules of conduct. People can sign up for public testimony over here if they'd like to sign up with Carla. If you sign up, your testimony must address the matter being considered at the time. Please state your name for the record. We don't need your address. If you are a lobbyist, tell us that you are a lobbyist and who you're lobbying for. You need to disclose that. If you're here with an organization, we'd appreciate knowing that too. People have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, the yellow light blinks, and there's a couple of beeps. When your time's up, the red light goes off. Conduct that disrupts the meeting, for example, shouting or interrupting others' testimony or interrupting during council deliberations is not allowed. People who disrupt the meeting face ejection from the meeting. If there's a disruption, I'll issue a warning that if any further disruption occurs, anyone who's disrupting the meeting will be subject to ejection. For the remainder of the meeting, anyone who fails to leave the meeting after being ejected will be subject to arrest for trespass. So on those happy thoughts, 3 minutes, name for the record. Carla, first three, please.
Okay. We originally had about 9 signed up from this morning, and I don't think everybody's here. Cameron Stark, Star Stoffer, Alex de Blasi.
Cameron, do you want to start?
Yes.
Thank you.
My name is Cameron Stark, and I'm actually a survivor of sexual violence. In December of 2011, there was a situation that happened, and I chose not to go forward with contacting authorities or police because I knew that there was a history, and where it happened was Fort Worth, Texas, or Tarrant County, that kits and basically accountability was never served. I want to say that I'm in favor of this bond being released because this just needs to be done. This database is going to be able to connect with other states and, like you said, find serial offenders and be able to connect them. And I think that it's just a good idea, I don't know, to connect on a higher level because this is a real problem in our society that it happens often. I know I don't fit the usual profile of somebody who is a survivor of sexual violence, but it happens to a lot of people. And many of them multiple times, too. So it would be good just to, I don't know, have more accountability. That kind of stuff would deter from further acts of crime committed by these, habitual offenders. It would connect people who run from state to state, because I know that's currently a problem, is when people leave states, sometimes warrants don't follow up and, you know, connections aren't made and they're missed. I think databases and information collecting is good. I think it provides accountability and transparency. Please vote yes on this. Thank you.
I can't let that testimony go by without thanking you. It's courageous testimony, and it gives voice to a lot of people.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good afternoon, Star Stoffer. I also am a survivor of sexual assault. When I was 15, I was brutally sexually assaulted in my home and almost died from that attack. That attack was not reported to the police, so a rape kit was never done for me. That goes back to the fact that prior to that, I had been sexually accosted by an officer of the law. So this is of utmost importance to me because we live in a rape culture here in America where sexual assault is almost glorified on a daily basis. And the objectification of marginalized community members, specifically women, women of color, youth, homeless. So I agree with Cameron that this database, it needs to be broadened. There needs to be more accountability. However, I have concerns about the storage of some of the samples for these rape kits. I'm concerned about how long these samples are viable until they're tested. I mean, how long can they remain in cold storage or however they're storing them before they get there? And can some of the negative results that are occurring on these kits be because the sample is no longer effective because it's been stored for too long? And then what happens to those cases in regards to that? That's a concern. Especially considering how far backlogged we were. I'm concerned about how many of the 900 kits that have been tested so far had failure rates due to being stored for too long. My other concern is, I believe on the agenda it said that they were looking for a grant of $90,000+ for personnel reasons, and I'm curious if those specific needs are going to be released to the public. So that we know exactly how that money is being allocated. Because this is such a pervasive issue in our society, and we can't afford on this issue to have even one single penny wasted that could get justice for a victim of sexual assault. As I've said, as Cameron said, this is extremely personal to us. So these are things that we really need to know so that accountability is happening across the board, especially considering that it is extremely risky for any rape victim to come forward and attempt to pursue a case against their attacker. And so we can't afford to waste kits. We can't afford to waste money. We can't afford to allocate resources to personnel where it's not needed, where we could allocate resources to personnel where it is more needed. So I'm just hoping that there's going to be some oversight in the spending of that grant.
Thank you. And we will. Those are good questions. We'll ask them. I'm sure they'll be happy to say. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Alex DeBlasi. I agree with my comrades, and I support their sentiments, and I do appreciate both of your candor in sharing your experience. I did want to talk about your comments regarding May Day violence. I think it highlights your ignorance that you are tone deaf regarding both history and political science. Violence has been a central force that underlies every capitalist city, state, and nation. Power is consolidated through violence. We saw that on Monday. And it is through violence that this same power is seized, and there are many historical examples of that. It is a neoliberal myth that violence is an unnatural manifestation. What we are left with is a city of Kool-Aid drinkers who care more about broken windows than the broken society that surrounds them. The dramatic acts of a few patriots in Black Bloc are part of a greater historical tradition. The United Nations Security Council, acting under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, defined the term terrorism as consisting of, quote, criminal acts, including against civilians, committed with the intent to cause death or serious bodily harm or taking of hostages with the purpose to provoke a state of terror in the general public or in a group of persons or particular persons, intimidate a population or compel a government or an international organization to do or abstain from doing any act. Who does that sound more like to you? 30 patriots in Black Bloc gear or a police bureau of 1,500? The following is a quote from Yale University professor Beverly Gage on the concept known as propaganda of the deed. Anarchists are given a bad reputation in the media, and I wish to dispel that. Among anarchism's founding premises was the idea that capitalist society was a place of constant violence. every law, every church, every paycheck was based on force. In such a world, to do nothing, to stand idly by while millions suffered, was itself to commit an act of violence. I encourage you to read the works of Emma Goldman and Murray Bookchin. Goldman's radical feminism is fresh and vital today, while Bookchin's principles of socialist libertarianism is fueling many of the ideas behind Portland Assembly, a body which I hope will one day render your office redundant. But until then, I'm really looking forward to the 6-month anniversary of your tenure as mayor. Perhaps you know what I'm talking about. I'm really looking forward to July 1st, 6 months into your term. I will be the chief petitioner of the campaign of your recall. I only need 35,000 signatures, and I only need 90 days. And I say only because, frankly, I've got my work cut out for me. The testimonies of people who have suffered at the hands of PPB under your leadership will reveal something far uglier than a few broken windows at Target, Brooks Brothers, or the Scientology building. You will be removed from office, and hopefully our next mayor will be the last as we seek to abolish your position.
Great. Be sure to get my wife to sign the petition. She'll sign it first.
Great.
Thank you for your testimony. And just, you know, it's a small group in here today. Traditionally, as you know, I'm supposed to keep you on point, but since you made the effort to be here, I'd like to. Thank you. Next, please.
I don't think Mr. Wilkins is here, so we'll go with Nancy Newell. And is there a Shan Strom, I believe is the last name?
Nick will sign it as well. Great, come on up. It's good to see you. Good afternoon.
Should I go ahead? The other person?
Okay. Yeah, please.
My name is Nancy Newell. I've had personal friends have been raped. I had a report confidentially told to me from the Springwater Corridor clear out by the city that every individual there, woman, has been raped not just once but twice. And I'm just curious how the police bureau is really accounted for on how they handle these cases, because I've known women in that position that wouldn't even talk to the police, especially in homeless conditions, because of the lack of trust, that they would truly be regarded and respected as a woman and what took place. I know in my era, it usually was a woman that was at fault. Quite a bit of that has changed, the attitude, and I think that we can really prove it with an opportunity like this. These kinds of testing seem to be accurate. You could research, actually, if there are people there that are multiple rapists and perhaps have been identified in that area and really shouldn't be in that area. They should be arrested. And I can see where there aren't enough programs for the victims, and I think we can do a lot better than that. I mean, there's supplies for testing, and then it seems very difficult for courts to act quickly enough to stop the behavior. And I don't know what state this was about 3 months ago. I don't know what state there is there now, but I don't think it's been improved. And yet you have police officers that should be active on it. I know there are women officers that are very concerned about it. So I think that's a real mark on the city. I think it's a real mark on us and how we perform as citizens to not protect our homeless people better. And I think we can do a lot better. And I think the police really should focus on it as a very important priority. Because once you have done that to a woman, their life is affected for life.
That's right.
And we don't want that. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Yes, I represent, or my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. One of the things on this is that I want to have a clear understanding that the Portland Police Bureau will be implementing 100% submission rate policy for all new cases. It's very important that that happens. Again, I want to have a clear understanding on your time frames, because you've stated that the private forensic lab that was used on these grants was very efficient, but you haven't really said anything on the state labs. And I want to have a clear understanding on these state labs, the 5 different labs that the state operates, is that we need to make sure they get funding for the best equipment they can possibly have. We need to make sure that the forensic scientists have the best training and the best people in there working, to where these state labs can become as efficient as the private labs. We need to set in place kind of an overview on the kits that are tested. For, say, every 5 kits tested at a state lab, have a private lab double test one of those kits to check the efficiency, make sure it's being done right, and we need to have those things set in place. We need to make sure that we have an understanding that the Portland Police Bureau is also responsible to make sure that if there is a funding issue, that is addressed in a reasonable manner. I feel a lot of these kits have been jeopardized just because of that, and that was brought up by other speakers on jeopardizing these kits over time, on having them sit for long periods of time. You jeopardized those kits, and it's hard to me to understand how a victim, you didn't get back to them for like 10 years. I mean, what is that? I mean, where does the DA come in position on this too, if they have a case they're looking at and the Portland police comes back and says, well, we haven't tested a kit for 10 years. I mean, who's responsible for that? Who does that fall back on? And the victims, like I say, are really the ones that should have had these tests done in a reasonable time frame for them, but that wasn't done. That wasn't the case here. And if it was due to resources, then the Portland Police Bureau needed to step up and say, we need more money. And by the way, in other locations, foundations have stepped up on these kits to make sure they have the proper funding to get them tested in a reasonable manner. So somebody did not follow through on this, and if it was for funding, which I believe a lot of this was, this should have never happened. And this should never be repeated ever again, and there should be 100% testing on every kit that is submitted, plain and simple. And it needs to be done in a reasonable time frame. And this 10-year talk, that's appalling to me, absolutely appalling.
Thank you all for your testimony. Could we have you come back up just so we could ask a few follow-up questions? There were a couple of questions that were asked that I thought were particularly intriguing. The storage time, is there a shelf life? And if so, how long is that?
It's all dependent on the quantity of the sample, the type of the sample, what kind of evidence it was located on. And given that all of those kits have been tested and we sometimes get evidence from tests that are 10, 15 years old, it's a science question that it would have to be determined by one of the forensic scientists. But we're still getting viable evidence from that long ago.
And one last question, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fritz. There was a question here about the personnel allocation in this request. What kind of personnel would be funded by this request? Or is it simply the contract for
this
ordinance, the lab?
This specific ordinance is the funding of a forensic consultant that the district attorney's office has. She's actually a retired scientist from OSP.
Oh, okay.
So she is present at our weekly staff meetings that we go through cases, so, and she parlays it into layman's English for us. The previous grant funded a district attorney that is solely Saki cases, as well as advocates and investigator positions.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, I don't know the terminology. A Saki case?
Sexual Assault Kit Initiative. That's the name of our grants.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Commissioner Fritz?
I was just checking on my phone, and it says that DNA does get, if it's left out in the sun and the rain, then it can decompose quite quickly. But if it's kept dark and cold, it doesn't. And as an example, they gave the body of Richard III, who lived in the 1500s, and they were able to identify that he was the person in the car park.
In storage, as well as OSP and the police bureau's evidence unit, they're packaged correctly. They're not going to deteriorate or be compromised.
Yeah, said that it's coming up to 60 million years, but then they found some that might be the world record at 419 million years old.
Exactly so. And because we retain kits 60 years now, and we have been at full submission since 2015, going forward, the problems prior to this will not happen again.
Great. Good to hear.
So when we're mandated by the Melissa's Law, Senate Bill 1551, if I'm remembering correctly, to submit those kits to the Oregon Crime Lab within 15 days, any kits that are allowable by law, which, of course, Jane Doe or anonymous kits, are not allowed to be sent to the crime lab.
Commissioner Fish, did you have a question? Any further questions or comments? Thank you very much for this presentation. Please call the roll, Carla.
Fish?
Please, thank you for your presentation. Sorry. Thank you for your presentation. Before I was elected in 2008, I was the lawyer for an organization called the Portland Women's Crisis Line. And I will tell you that in addition to some of the challenges they face as an organization, I learned a lot about domestic violence and about the resources available to people in our community and the gaps in our system. And as a parent, I think a lot about these issues. So I regret the history that has led us to this moment, but I'm very pleased that we're correcting this and moving forward. And thank you both for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you for the good work you're doing, and it's really good to hear that we're just about to be totally caught up on our backlog. That's been a long time coming, so thank you. Aye.
Udaly.
I just want to commend everyone involved for taking care of this backlog and acknowledge that there are many reasons survivors choose not to pursue legal action, and a big reason is they have very little faith in the system, and I hope that this will send a message and restore some faith. Aye.
Fritz.
Commissioner Fish, I either didn't know or had forgotten that you were the lawyer for the Portland Women's Crisis Line, which is a fabulous organization recently renamed Call to Safety in recognition that, as Mr. Stark said, it's not limited to any one gender or gender identity, that these attacks are perpetrated as serial acts of violence. And so thank you for the work that you do. It's tremendously important. I imagine it must be dreadfully difficult to do that day after day, just facing the fact that so many people have been abused. But thank you for finding the ones that we can find. Aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you. This is great news, and obviously this grant helps us speed things up, and this is the first step towards rectifying a true wrong that was perpetrated upon many victims of sexual abuse. So I'm really thrilled with the work you two are doing and the work that your team is doing. It is a well-thought-out proposal, and it's going to have a huge positive impact. So I really appreciate the work you're doing. I also want to thank people who testified today. That was some difficult testimony, but hugely important. And as I say, it gave voice to a lot of other people. So thank you for that. The ordinance is adopted. Thank
Mayor?
You both.
If I could just say
Fish?
One thing.
Yeah,
if
of course
victims
you can.
Would like to know the status of their sexual assault kit, they can call the Rose Project at 503-823-0125.
Could you repeat that, please?
503-823-0125, or they can send an email to roseproject@portlandoregon.gov.
And if you happen to be listening and don't have a paper and pen, you can also call 823-4000 and ask
Correct.
For that same service.
Thank you both. Thank Commissioner you. Fish, did you have
something? No, just something else.
Oh, very good.
Thank you, ladies.